Hi there, and welcome to another one of my podcasts. It's now January. I've filed my income tax returns, which makes me feel happy. But on the other hand, I'm still in the red, and Brexit is coming, and at the end of the month, in fact, a day before this goes online, I shall be even older, which is never good. Well, today I'm going to make the podcast a little different, in as much as I usually play a lot of obscure, long-forgotten people who just happen to be very good. This time I'm going to dedicate the whole podcast to what you might call celebrities, big names of the past, people whose names are still regarded today as greats. And I'm also going to do something unusual in the popular song of the past department. I'm actually going to play the same song twice by two great singers. The first one is Billie Holiday. This was recorded when she was only 23 years old and still singing as a sort of guest, with recordings fronted nominally by Teddy Wilson and his group. I met Teddy Wilson, but that's another story I won't bother you with now. And they did four songs in a session. The arrangement was pretty basic, with the various wind instruments just playing straight chords behind her, what you might call pads, and then the decoration provided by Teddy Wilson on piano. And Billie Holiday was a great singer, and she delivers it beautifully. Although only 23, she'd lived a life that you or I probably will never live, and so in a way she was older than her years suggested. It's a very fine performance of it, but it's not special. It could have been any other recording that she made that session, or in many other sessions that she was involved in throughout the 30s, happily before her voice started going, so you hear her at her best in terms of vocal power. As I say, I'm not criticising this version of it. It's very good, but you'll hear later on how the song can be made better because of the power of the arrangement when I have it performed by another great singer, maybe 12, 13 years later. Well, without trying to be too mysterious, I'll tell you who that is later. In the meantime, this is Billie Holiday singing You Go To My Head in 1938.
And I find you spinning round in my brain, like the bubbles in a glass of champagne. You go to my head like a sip of sparkling burgundy brew, and I find the very mention of you like the kicker in a julep or two. The thrill of the thought that you might give a thought to my plea casts a spell over me. Still I say to myself, get a hold of yourself. Can't you see that it never can be? You go to my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise, like a summer with a thousand Julys. You intoxicate my soul with your eyes. Though I'm certain that this heart of mine hasn't a ghost of a chance in this crazy romance, you go to my head. Go to my head.
Now, I'm going to admit a bias. I really am not particularly keen on hearing opera sung in German. I don't think it's a very pretty language. I'm sure others will disagree with me, but that's the way I feel. I particularly don't like it when people sing Italian opera translated into German. That really doesn't work at all. The lady I'm going to play you now sang in German most of the time for most of her career. Her name was Lotte Lehmann. She sang with all sorts of people, including Schaliapin, so she was a top-class soprano. But as I say, she tended to sing everything in German, which is fine if it was written in German, and the aria I'm going to give you, sung by her today, is a Mozart aria from the Zauberflöte, the magic flute, in which was written in German, so there's nothing wrong with that. Ach, ich fühl's, if I'm pronouncing it properly. I'm not really good at German. She was born in 1888 and survived till 1976, by which time she'd long emigrated to the USA, and she had sung by that time many concerts of Lieder. But she started off as an opera singer, particularly fine, I think, in Mozart, and of course that's what this is. This is a recording that she made in her Electric Odeon series of records, recorded in the early 30s, the 23rd of April 1932 to be precise, when she would have been in her early 40s and probably at her peak. This then is Lotte Lehmann singing Ach, ich fühl's from the Zauberflöte in 1932, and it's beautifully done. You really couldn't sing this aria much better than she sang it. And she became, of course, a pretty much legendary singer of the type that she was. She wasn't a great dramatic soprano. She didn't often sing the French and Italian repertoire, and if she did, it was translated into German. But within the limitations of what she really liked to sing, Mozart and so forth, and Lieder, she was really a world-class legend. So here we are. I've never played you a track of her before. This is Lotte Lehmann singing some Mozart in 1932.
Oh,
Well now, Emmanuel Goldenberg was born in Bucharest, but as a young man experienced some very nasty anti-Semitism because he was, of course, Jewish, and the family decided to emigrate to the USA, which turned out to be a very good move. He began in the Yiddish theater in the early years of the century. He was born in 1893, by the way, and gradually went on to the normal stage. He ended up in his life appearing on 40 plays on Broadway and in over 100 films, in which he played all sorts of roles. He was actually quite an intellectual. But what he's remembered for, of course, is playing gangsters. And this began very early on. Remember, Sound only came in 1928, and he had a huge hit in his first big role called Little Caesar. In the 1930s, he was very vocal in drumming up anger against what the Nazis were up to, but of course he was also called upon to publicize his films. And what I'm going to play you today is a sort of semi-humorous recording which was available on a record, which indeed did just that. It publicized Little Caesar, his first big hit. Edward G. Robinson, the G incidentally stood for Goldenberg, his original real surname. Well, we don't often hear Edward G. Robinson as himself. This isn't quite himself because he's obviously trying to be entertaining as well, but he's not in a role. So this is quite a rare recording. Edward G. Robinson, not in a film, not in a play, but being himself on the 28th of January, 1931. I said that this podcast would be full of famous celebrities. You can't deny that that's true of this gentleman. Here he is, Edward G. Robinson.
You know, being the first gangster of the land, that is in a make-believe way, I have to keep abreast of the time. Startling things are happening. I just read the other day where a gangster was actually arrested in Chicago. I've been in Hollywood now for a year, and during that time I've made 7 or 8 pictures. And the only difference between one day at the studio and another was that on Monday I bumped off 6 men, and on Tuesday I killed 6. Some of them were my very best friends, too. A couple of murders right after breakfast was a fair average. One just before lunchtime. Then I would knock off a couple of more just about tea time. And I would always manage to get an extra one in just before the whistle blew. Really, my hands are full of calluses, corns, and bunions from having handled 12 and 16-cylinder machine guns, 48s, pineapples, and other such deadly weapons. If you look closely at my trigger finger, you would see that I've worn a groove in it. Not that I mind all this sort of thing, but personally, I love crime. I think there's a great future in it, don't you? And I can't tell you how unhappy I felt when for a time it looked as though miniature golf were going to supplant racketeering and gang warfare as the great American outdoor sport. But seriously speaking, in making the picture, Little Caesar, everybody concerned in this production was of one mind, and that was to create an honest, straightforward character study without resorting to any hackneyed melodramatic tricks, false situations, and hokum usually employed. The fact that Little Caesar has proven to be such an unprecedented success is gratifying to everyone concerned. Particularly gratifying because of what it means for pictures to come. It proves that one can do an honest job and be successful. I am very happy to have been associated in the production of Little Caesar, and to have had the privilege of impersonating its leading character. Thank you.
Well, now, I said at the beginning of this podcast that I was going to play the same song twice by two different singers, both great singers in their own way. This one happens to be my favourite of all, born Norma Dolores Eggstrom. I think you can see why she decided to change her name. Peggy Lee, as she was better known, was born in 1920 and survived till 2002. In her last few years, she wasn't well at all. She had to spend quite long periods inside a sort of an iron lung, as they called it, to sort of pump her up before she could sing. Nevertheless, she was a great singer. I think she's maybe the best of them all, but again, that's a personal opinion. And she sings a wonderful version of the same song, You Go to My Head. Helping her do this, however, because this was not just let's put down 4 tracks in 3 hours, as Billie Holiday often had, particularly in her early years. But a lot of trouble was taken over each song, and they got hold of a really good arranger quite often for a lot of Peggy Lee's recordings. In this case, one of the greatest, Gordon Jenkins. This was a B-side, you might say, because she had a massive hit on the other side with a song called Lover, which I put on. Arrangement. This one isn't so spectacular, but just as wonderful because it brings out all sorts of feelings in the song that you might not think were there. The song itself is great, lovely chord changes, all that stuff, but with the wonderful arrangement that you always get from Gordon Jenkins, it reaches a whole new level. And with Peggy Lee, well, this is to me the definitive recording of this song. I hope that you'll agree. Peggy Lee then singing somewhere around 1950, I think, when she would have been around 30, just coming to her greatest years, singing You Go To My Head, one of my favourite records.
Spinning round in my brain like the bubbles in a glass of champagne. You go to my head like a sip of sparkling burgundy brew, and I find the very mention of you like the kicker in a julep or two. The thrill of the thought that you might give a thought to my plea casts a spell over me. Then I say to myself, get a hold of yourself. Can't you see this never can be? You go to my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise like a summer with a thousand Julys. You intoxicate my soul with your eyes. Though I'm certain that this heart of mine hasn't a ghost of a chance in this crazy romance. You go to my head. You go to
Well now, perhaps Billy Bennett isn't still remembered as well as some of the other names I've played today, but in his time he was a huge name and one of the big stars of British music hall. Not many stars of British musical earn the Distinguished Conduct Medal or the Military Medal or indeed the Belgian Croix de Guerre, but Billy Bennett won all three when he was a soldier during World War I. He was born in 1887, survived till 1942, and specialised in sort of silly monologues and silly songs. As I've mentioned before, there are lots of things which comedians can say on stage now which they couldn't do then. And so he relied for his laughs on total nonsense, things that contradicted themselves, logical jokes, and just silly observations, all put into a sort of rhyming pattern so that he was able to deliver either silly poems or, as I say, silly songs. He made quite a few records, and I've played a couple before. This, I thought, might suit because made in 1929, at the end of the year, it's called If Winter Comes. This year, we don't seem to be getting a winter. Global warming, maybe. As I speak, it's already halfway through January, and the temperature today was 10 to 12 centigrade, which is something like 50 or 60 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, this is not winter. In those days, you expected snow and freezing cold, and I haven't even put my overcoat on yet. So maybe this is now an historic piece in more ways than one. Billy Bennett, then, typical song of his, If Winter Comes, recorded on the 20th of December, 1929.
The world is full of sunshine, the birds are full of song, the happy, humble homes are full of hope. The pubs are full of swallows, the bagpipe full of wind, and the barber's cat is full of hair and soap. The bees are full of beeswax, the tripod full of tripe, and the plumbers that I meet are full of plum. The bus is full of bustle, and the powder's full of earth, but the world will lose its smile if winter comes. If winter comes, you'll find the roses dead if winter comes. You'll find the noses red if winter comes. We'll all be frozen to the bone. If one can't sleep together, then two must sleep alone. If summer goes, if Pancake Tuesday, if winter comes, it's Sheffield Wednesday. A lady in our village is a simple life believe. She wears a daring costume that resembles Mother Eve. But when Christmas time approaches, there'll be only holly leaves. So she's hoping for the best if winter comes. Let me sit down for a minute, sir, till I watch all the seasons go by. There's a season for cricket and ludo, and a season they put in pork pie. Nature is rich in the springtime. Spring mattress, spring onion, spring stick. If a Scotsman sits down on a thistle, then it's springtime as soon as he clicks. Summer's the time for the seaside, where you'll see all the ladies on view. You can see a lot more in the sunshine. You can see more than that in review. Autumn's the time when the leaves fall, for Adam said I won't be done. But when he got there, the cupboard was bare, so he said, what a good boy am I. Winter is chock full of winter, and the girl's feet are frozen, I'm told. So marry a man that has whiskers, that stuff in your socks when it's cold. Was inside a poor butcher's window on one of these cold winter's nights, and I fitted the poor little sausage with nothing to wear but its tights. When up jumped a little black pudding and said this shop is a disgrace, the black pudding shouted, I'm freezing, and with cold he went white in the face. Outside in the street was a robin, picking up crumbs on the track. But the robin slipped down on an iceberg, and his red breast slipped right up his back. If winter comes, you'll find the roses dead. If winter comes, you'll find the noses red. If winter comes, we'll all be frozen to the bone. If one can't sleep together, then two must sleep alone. If summer goes, if Pancake Tuesday, if winter comes, it's Sheffield Wednesday. Last year we had a pudding, would have been all right, no doubt. But Ma boiled it in the kettle and we couldn't get it out. So we had to take it in our turn and suck it through the spout. So we're hoping for the best if winter comes.
And you can't get much further from Billy Bennett than our final track, because it's delivered by the great Ezio Pinza, one of the great operatic basses of the century. That's the 20th century, I should say. He was born in 1892 and died in 1957. Not only did he have one of those voices of which you could say you could be happy listening to him sing numbers out of the phone book, because everything just sounded glorious when he sang it, at least for the first 40, 50 years of his life. Towards the end of his life, his voice did begin to go, particularly when he ended up singing in musicals, because he wasn't used to singing every night. But it was going a bit before then. There are some recordings, you can hear the top going. At its peak, though, around 1930, it was absolutely fantastic. And I'm going to give you a recording made around that time. As with the earlier operatic excerpt, this is from Mozart's Die Zauberflöte, but he's singing, I believe, in Italian. With Mozart, it's interesting because he was from Austria and his operas were sometimes written to be sung in Italian and sometimes in German and sometimes both. So it's not sort of wrong hearing him sing it in Italian. And I like the sound of Italian better than German, as I've already said. However, whichever language Ezio Pinza decided to sing in, you know that it's going to sound fantastic. This is him at his very best. He had a truly deep, rich bass voice, which was very flexible. I believe they call him a basso cantante. Not a dramatic bass of the type that Chaliapin was the supreme example. But he's a great singer and sang all sorts of roles. And in some, he's absolutely supreme. In Forza del Destino, in Messa de Requiem, both of Verdi, you find nobody who will equal him. Here he is singing in Mozart. And of course, he was one of the great Don Giovannis as well. So sit back and enjoy the wonderful recording of Ezio Pinza. This was recorded in 1927 on the 22nd of March, and Pinza was just about at his very best in that year. What would he have been? 35? Wonderful. Ezio Pinza, a man who was blessed with a great voice, film star looks, the whole kit and caboodle.
Here, O dear.
And now we come to my track, and before I do so, as always, I want to remind you to share the link to this site so that everybody who maybe doesn't know about this old music might get the chance to hear it and enjoy it. And also, of course, if any of you would like to add to your 78 collection, I have doubles, which I want to sell and thus give myself some space. And I won't sell at dealer's prices so that you can do so cheaply. Just get in touch, spats47@ntlworld.com. Well, you know, there's a world of difference between the way they're recorded back before World War I, just singing into a horn. And if anything went wrong, you just had to do another take. And now, when you can do all sorts of things digitally, cut things out, put them back, tune things up, mix things again so that you can hear more of one thing than the other. The problem is, after spending several hours in a studio, you start getting what I call ear blind. You don't hear things which ought to be totally obvious and would have been had you been more alert at the beginning of your session. This is a case in point. I've written an arrangement based on the original one of It Takes a Long, Long Train with a Red Caboose, a song first recorded by Peggy Lee around 1950. I've always liked the song, so I decided I must do a version. However, listening to what I have recorded so far when I got home, I noticed that you can't hear the drums, you can hardly hear the staccato trombones, the piano isn't that audible until the end, and probably the vocal is too loud. So I'm going to give you the track as it is now, and in a couple of months' time when I've finished it off, I'll give it to you again in its final version, and you'll be able to hear the difference. Hopefully, you'll hear how much better it will sound when it's mixed properly. However, here it is for the moment. It Takes a Long, Long Train with a Red Caboose. Basically a blues song, but with a middle eight. And until the next time, when I will have been to Belgium on my birthday, I say au revoir. I went down to the depot just to meet the 1202. She wrote that she'd be on it, but the train went riding through. Hooey, ooey, hear that whistle say. It takes a long, long train with a red caboose to carry my blues away. The engineer was waiting as the train went down the track. I felt so heavy-hearted that I couldn't wave him back. Hooey, ooey, hear that whistle say. It takes a long, long train with a red caboose to carry my blues away. I listen to that lonesome whistle, listen to that mournful bell. The echo said, I told you so, but my heart said, fare thee well. I stood there in the station with a letter in my hand, cried just like a baby could have been a loving man. Hooey, ooey, hear that whistle say. It takes a long, long train with a red caboose to carry my blues away. I listen to that lonesome whistle, listen to that mournful bell. The echo said, I told you so, but my heart said, fare thee well. I know she didn't miss me, 'cause she's always on the dot. She told me that she loved me, but I guess she loved me not. Hooey, ooey, hear that whistle say. It takes a long, long train with a red caboose to carry my blues away. to carry my blues away.